The following program is brought to you in living color on NBC.
She's an Olympic champion. He is a two-time Olympian. Together, they're figure skating royalty turned NBC commentators. And now, they're pop culture icons. But more importantly, they're best friends. NBC presents Tara and Johnny. Here's Tara Lipinski and Johnny Weir.
Hi, guys.
Pardon my sick voice.
Honey, tell us all about your syndrome. What happened to you now?
I don't know, Jay. I came back on the plane yesterday. The sore throat was starting, and then it just got progressively worse. You know when it goes really fast, too? Like, you wake up, you're like, I don't know if I don't feel good. And then by the end of the day, you're like, okay, I cannot breathe swallow. So this isn't going to be good. I think it's just a little cold. But I woke up this morning, and Todd is shooting something. So he was shooting really late last night. Came home, I think, at like 3 a.m. I was out. I didn't even hear him come in. And then, like, I opened my eyes when my alarm went off, and he was, like, kind of awake, and he was, like, waiting for me to just be so excited to see him, which I was. I, like, missed him so much on this trip. But all I could do was cough and try to breathe. And he's like, are you okay? And then afterwards, he's like, I don't know. Are you that excited to see me today?
Wow, baby, you're so hot right now. Meanwhile, you're crying and your nose is all red.
Oh, man.
But, okay, so you were in New Jersey for the Miss America pageant. Why don't we go through what happened to you?
It was an interesting experience. It really was. And, you know, going into it, I had judged Miss Universe a long time ago. And it was a lot of fun, and they give you, like, a lot of guidelines on how to judge. But this experience was so much more intense, and it really was – it was interesting because, like, we got there and we sat down with all the board of directors and the committee, and you just learn about the organization. And I think a lot of people that watch are kind of like, oh, a beauty pageant sometimes, you know, you see the swimsuit and the gown. And even I grew up watching this with my mom. It was like one of our things to do every year, tradition. We loved Miss America. But, you know, maybe I have been ignorant, but.
Well, there's a full connotation of a beauty pageant being just like airheads.
Right, or it's just like, you know, a beauty pageant and not anything more. And obviously, you know from, like, the segment where they have questions, they want someone who's, like, poised and intelligent and well-spoken. But I don't think I ever really truly realized what this organization does. It's crazy, Johnny. Like, I have mad respect for Miss America because they are one of the leading organizations for young women and scholarships. What they do for education, what these girls do. So I always thought, oh, you win, and that's sort of like you have to be the winner, and you get the money and you get a scholarship or whatever it is. It's all the girls that are part of this, you know, these beauty pageants of state. Like, if you're Miss South Carolina, you're still eligible and able to get money for school or a scholarship. And it's like, so it's furthering their education, and it's like a different idea of what this beauty pageant that we have is. It's much deeper, and it's really cool. So I, like, am a super fan now. And
well, it changes these women's lives in ways that go beyond just her becoming Miss America and traveling the world. It actually gives her a chance to go to school that she may not have.
Exactly.
She spent her college tuition on beaded gowns.
Exactly. So it furthers their education, and it's really not just about, like, the year. Because also what these girls do, and I didn't realize that either, is like, oh, you think, oh, Miss America travels for a year, you know, doing good service and visiting children's hospitals, and, you know, because they work with one of the children's charities, and they're sort of partners, and they go around and pretty much go to every single children's hospital there is. And so these girls are doing this all year, but they live at they're allowed two suitcases, and they don't come home hardly
ever.
Can you
imagine two suitcases
for a year? And it was really fascinating. And all that they do all year long is a full-time job that is not easy. It's not like they go do an interview and that's it. Like, they are working and they're doing so much good. And I don't know, the whole experience just made me feel so warm and fuzzy, and I just have a greater appreciation for them. And then it's not really only about this year. It's like you hear these stories from these young women and sort of how it's set up their lives, and they've gone on to do incredible things, you know? So it's like a beauty pageant that's, you know, if you...
a beauty pageant, but so much more.
So much more. And if you get to a certain level in this beauty pageant world, you're really opening your, you know, your opportunities and possibilities for, like I said, furthering your education, but then sort of moving on and doing something even greater. So anyway, I got real into it and I loved it. And
can I tell you when I tuned in, and I do believe I sent you a text at the exact moment that I tuned in. I wanted to see what you looked like on television.
Aww.
Because mommy loves you. But I clicked in, and I was towards the end of the program because I was busy. And the first thing I saw was the talent portion, but it was a young lady with two Muppets, and they were yodeling.
Yes.
And it was like ventriloquist puppets, whatever they're called.
Right.
And I mean, good for the education and the scholarships and the program and the history of the event. But I tuned in right during the Muppets. Tell me how you dealt with that sitting on the panel.
Okay, well, first, I'm going to go back a little bit because, yes, I kind of told everyone and you now what Miss America is all about. But beyond that, we sat for 6 hours, and I'm not kidding you, 6 hours straight watching these girls' interviews. So it would be like a 10-minute interview, and you really got to get a sense of who these women are, and they're asking all those tough questions and it letting you in on so much more than just one question at the end of a televised show. So we really got to know them before we saw them on stage, which was fascinating because you do, as you know, a person who's so-called, you know, judging this event, you're forming opinions and making judgments. And I felt that that was happening to me in the room. And now I realize when I was just a viewer, how naive I was. And, you know, you're just judging on what you're seeing in that moment. And you're not getting like the full grasp of the situation and really knowing who
the
these girls
story.
Are. So yeah. I felt like going into it that night, I had a good idea of who these girls were. But again, you know, when they're coming out in swimsuits or they're doing the talent portion, it is still a bit of a, you know, odd competition in a way. You know what I mean? Like some woman has to go out in her bikini and strut her stuff. And yes, the point behind that is like having confidence and like they give you sort of the guidelines on how to judge each of these, you know, portions.
Well, tell me about the beauty or the bathing suit portion then. I would assume confidence and fitness are
it's
big in
confidence
that?
Fitness yes, because these girls the year before, like health is like, so in the interviews you learn about like what they're doing to be healthy and fit and all of these things to get ready for this competition. So it's about being healthy, fit, and then having confidence and sort of, I think it's a lot like in a way skating, like you have to show your personality, you know, on a stage where you're not able to talk. So they, you know, they want to see someone that's likable and someone who gives off, you know, great energy. And that's really hard to judge with, you know, just a woman walking down in a swimsuit. And it's going so fast. You're like, oh, my goodness. It's really hard to judge because you have, what, 10 seconds? So that's what you're looking for there. Similar to what's happening in the when they come down in their beautiful gowns. I mean, I think a lot of it is tradition. Of what Miss America, you know, is and
here
has always
she comes.
Right. So I think there's part of that you have to just accept and understand. Except again, the swimsuit one is sort of like, I just wonder if they changed it up a bit somehow. But anyway, moving on. Then the talent portion, it is
the Muppets killed me.
Okay, so it is hard to judge because first off, like,
how do you put a jazz dance routine versus Muppets?
Right. And then also you're asking these women to be...
Did anyone play the flute?
No. But you're asking these women to do all of these. Like, they have to be so well-spoken. And they all stand. They all have a platform that they sort of stand and stand for and hope that if they win, that they'll be doing good for their, you know, organization or their charity or whatever it is. So, you know... Going into this, they have to be fit. They have to have a great personality. They have to be well-spoken. They have to have, you know, done incredible work for their charity or for, you know, their organization or whatever that, you know, whatever they stand behind. Then they have to have a talent And, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. So, you know, if you're just tuning in for the talent portion, and I feel like I probably, if I'm being honest, always felt that way too. It's sort of like, okay, what exactly is this?
Wait, before you continue, tell me, if you could not have figure skating as your talent,
oh gosh,
what would your talent be?
I mean, obviously not singing. We know that that's really out of the question.
I think secretly you're great at hacky sack.
Hacky sack? I don't think hacky sack. I don't think it's that. I mean, I would dance.
You would definitely dance.
But the problem is like, if you're not, some of the girls were, like, they had grown up dancers. And, like, they danced for the first, like, you know, 17 years of their life. And, like, their sort of charity organization or whatever it is that they stand for is, you know, arts. And, you know, there's a, one girl had a charity, I think it was part of that, So You Think You Can Dance Too. It's like part of that dance day, and so they get really really behind it. But at the same time, like, if I chose dance as my talent, like, I don't know if at like 18 when I entered this, if I could become a true dancer that would blow someone away in my minute routine, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so maybe you would be the Muppet Girl.
I mean, that, okay, so first off, when they said that, I thought. And then all of a sudden, I'm sitting there and I see puppets, you know, and
well,
I'm like,
first of all, let me say something before you continue. For anyone out there who does ventriloquism, and I'm not saying Muppets or puppets or whatever correctly, I apologize. I'm not part of that world, not about that life. But anyway, it was funny to see this beautiful woman sitting with two very aggressively, you know, styled Muppets on my television on Sunday night. Anyway, continue.
Okay, but when I first saw that, I mean, I'm sort of like, I don't know. I think it's going to be hard for me to go for that talent. When there's going to be, like, I heard there was amazing singers and dancers, and maybe because we come from that background, I was most excited to see that. But I have to tell you, Johnny, first I see the puppets, and I'm like, oh, boy. And then she starts, and I don't care what you have to say. She was so good. I was thoroughly entertained. I thought her talent was everything it should have been. I mean, seriously, Johnny. I want, if you didn't DVR it, you should go back. If you did, you should go back and watch that.
What is a DVR?
You know, where you tape it.
Ah, thank you.
You should go back and watch it. And just, I mean, she has two puppets and she's like,
she's yodeling in between the two.
Them, but then she is yodeling and singing in between them, and it's going at this fast pace. I thought it was crazy. So now another newfound respect that I have, and maybe that's my next talent I pursue.
Ventriloquist yodeling?
I mean, maybe.
And I mean, let's work on that together. We have a month in Korea.
High end. I mean, those were not just like little sock puppets. Those puppets cost a pretty penny.
I'm so sorry.
They could have been on Sesame Street. They could have.
Wow. I have never heard anyone refer to as a Muppet as a high-end Muppet. Wow. So fancy. Well, I can't wait until we have our own Muppets that sit with us on broadcast.
Oh,
and we can talk
man.
Through them. Like, they can be our evil sides. Whenever you and I have something really bitchy to say about
goodness.
A skater we're commenting, we'll have
right.
a Muppet ventriloquist it.
Yeah. So anyway, the talent portion, there were some... I have to be honest, you know, there were some girls that I just...
Horrific.
I didn't get into it. I didn't get into that portion of the event.
Not about that life.
And then there were some, the girl who won, you know...
Miss North Dakota.
Her dance, like, I loved it. Did you watch her? She had the chair where she, like, ran up, stood on the chair, and then, like, you know how you kind of, like, put your foot on it and push it down and run over it?
No, I missed her. I saw two dancers. One was South Carolina and the other was West Virginia, perhaps, plus Muppets.
Okay,
those,
so
that's
you
the
missed
only
her.
Talent
she
I saw.
Brought the house down. Like, people were going bananas. It was, I forget this. I think it was Michael Jackson, if I'm correct. I may be wrong, but she brought the house down. She was like a performer. She was so cute, so fun, not over the top. I think that was something that I was very sensitive about is like, if you're looking for someone, you know, for young girls to look up to and represent the organization in a 2017 way. Like, I don't
Johnny
think
Weir.
I don't think it's a typical like fake smiling, just over the top woman. I think it's someone has to be relatable and just, you know, I don't know. I think I was very sensitive when I was like hearing the interviews or learning more about the girls and then seeing them up there. Like, if it's like skating, if it's too forced, it feels funny. It just doesn't feel natural or organic. And you're sort of like, I don't know, you know, but North Dakota was exactly who she was. And she just like owned it. And like her talent was so much fun to watch. So I liked her. You know, the problem was, and I wish I could have told some of these girls in advance, is like the dancers, you have to pick, it's like skating, you have to pick the right music, because that is going to set the tone for the audience. The energy level is not going to be there if you choose like a song that's not connecting. And I think some girls chose the wrong music. And then there was like one girl who chose this really upbeat song, but was moving very slowly, almost to like a different style of dance. And
she,
I'm like,
could have been the West Virginia that I saw.
I'm like,
she,
I don't know. Maybe you should be doing like Swan Lake and not
not
this
last
pop
dance
song,
not so, disco.
Right. So exactly.
And you know then, I had issue with, and I'm interjecting just because I was
sorry.
Your TV viewer.
Yeah, I want
to
hear.
So I had trouble because, okay, for those of you who didn't watch, they added a second question, and they were like, wow, it's the first time in history we're adding a second interview question for each of the finalists. And I thought that it was the most uncomfortable thing I've seen on television in a long time, because the first question you guys asked the girls was something that would make them a little bit more relatable, aside from
it was
how
more
do you feel
about personality.
Right. But they did not know the right thing to say for the most part. I remember I was sort of rooting for Miss Texas to a certain extent, and then she gave her like I'm a chill girl answer. And they asked if they had, if it was reversed and it was Mr. America instead of Miss America, what events they would have. And she was like, she made it all cutesy, like she was flirting with the host and be like, wow, I'd like to see you in a Speedo in the swimsuit contest. And I just was completely turned off. And that's something that I liked about North Dakota, who won.
Exactly.
Was that she was chill in both the hard-hitting, like, should we remove Confederate statues around the country question, as well as the, you know, I'm a normal girl question.
Yeah, and I think what I liked about her, and you, like, saw it in the interview earlier, you know, that when we were sort of getting to know these girls, you know, so many of them, there's some that are, you know, they want to further their education, but they, you know, they want to be an actress or a singer, and it's, like, this very personal journey for them. And Kara from North Dakota, she went to Brown, and, like, she comes from North Dakota. When she was, like, you know, thinking about college, she was told, you come from North Dakota, like, the small town, you're never going to Brown. And she sort of, like, watch me. And then, you know, she talks about how it's, like, you know, you want to be Miss America? Like, that's never going to happen. And she was sort of, like, you know what, this is, I'm going to try it. If it doesn't work out, that's fine. It, you know, like, she kind of was doing it for the right reasons. You know what I mean? It wasn't this, like, crazy pageant idea that you have of some of these girls. She just really was in it to, like, have fun. And I think she was so surprised. But she really did, like you said, during those questions, she was so natural and just, it wasn't forced. She wasn't trying to be cute. She wasn't trying to be someone she wasn't, or, like, impress, you know, her judges or the audience. And I don't know, I think that's 100% why she won.
Yeah, but I agree. I mean, that's why I liked her when she answered her questions. I didn't, I was, you know me, I was feeling Jersey. Just
I mean, I like Jersey. Jersey's, I mean, Jersey
strong.
Was, I'm pretty sure she was third. So she was right up there. She was really cute and good. I liked her.
Yeah, but I mean, North Dakota really sold it to me. Not that I'd seen the whole night, but she really sold me when she did the interview portion. But, you know, one of my favorite people in the world, Carson Wentz, the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, he's also from North Dakota. So I felt, you know, like I should be supportive of North
Dakota. You should. I mean, the questions were interesting, too. I've been getting so many, like, tweets that of these passionate people. I'm not sure if they think I came up with the question. Like, some people are upset that we're asking such politically charged questions.
It was really hard hitting, and every question seemed to be very anti-establishment, I guess I could say.
Right.
But they're important to the majority of Americans, so I'm glad that they went there.
Right. I think ABC was trying to sort of be current with what's happening in in the world of politics today. But and usually they are. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I feel like a lot of them usually are politically based. But, you know.
Well, isn't that the traditional answer? World peace.
Yeah.
For beauty pageants.
Right.
So, I mean.
But anyway, all the tweets crack me up because I'm like, guys, I first off didn't pick the question, you know.
Yeah.
And they just handed me a card. And then secondly, like, I don't know. Like this, chill out. It's just like crazy.
Really rough times we live in.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Now, guys, when we get back, first of all, congratulations, honey, for getting through Miss America.
Thank you.
And congratulations to Miss North Dakota for
yes.
becoming our new Miss America. But when we get back, we're going to talk about a few things. I'm going back to school. We're going to talk about the KCON convention. Russian. And I had a run-in with an old dude and his crotchety wife. Be right back.
This is NBC News Update, sponsored by Ideal Toys. Here is Jane Pauley.
President Reagan has returned to Washington after a California vacation to a busy week. I'm Jane Pauley in New York. More news later on this NBC station.
Summer has come and passed. The innocent can never last. Wake me up when September ends. Wake me up when September ends.
Okay, so we're back, Jay. I can't wait yes. to hear about your shenanigans that have happened in the last week.
Okay, so first of all, I'm going back to school. Not really. I'm not going to a proper class or anything. But when I moved away from North Jersey, I lost a lot of my Russian infrastructure. So the people that I would speak Russian with every day and practice. And, you know, I still keep in touch with people and I still can read and write and do everything. And I still speak well. But I definitely felt myself starting to slip with my language. So while I've been down here, I have really been trying to reach out to anyone that might know a tutor or somebody that can commit to my sort of scheduling, which, you know, is tough. So I can't actually go back and take a class at school just because I will miss 96% of them. And they don't happen after 8 p.m. So I can't actually get into a school. So I need one of those online programs. Maybe. Anyway, I went and met with people at a local university, the Russian department, and I am getting a book bag and composition books and going into classes. I'm going to do them almost every day for my Russian, just so that I can be a proper spy need be.
Oh.
Yeah, so you're going to have
to
step
I
it
should
up.
Start. What I mean, should I do like Rosetta Stone? What should I do?
I feel like Rosetta Stone is beneficial. So the thing is, the way I learned Russian was sort of word of mouth. I learned it the way that people that are first generation, like their parents were born in a Russian-speaking country and moved to America, I learn it very much in the same way that those people do. So a lot of my friends, friends of Jackie, who I've talked about on the show before, one of my besties, she can read and write and everything in Russian, but friends of hers who are also first generation can't read Russian, they can't write Russian, they can only speak it, and they speak it the way that their babushki would do it, their grandmothers would speak to them. So for me, I am, you know, an ex-figure skater, so I need to know everything. So I want to know why I say certain things and why this is the grammatical rule to the reason I say things this way. So that's the big thing for me. I want to get really thinky about it and understand why I'm saying what I'm saying. And also, like, my teacher, she's from Belarus, and she has a very pretty accent, and I don't feel like I'll lose. I have a Moscow accent, apparently, when I talk. So I don't want to lose that, but I think it's going to be really good for me. And I'm so nervous, actually, because it's been so long since anyone's taught me anything, and I haven't taught them anything.
Right.
You know what I mean? Can you imagine going back to school and, like, sitting and having to try to learn?
I mean, I think, but you're like me. I feel like we like that. We like.
I like being whipped into submission. I like being told, like, this is how this rule works, and you can't throw glitter at it and it'll go away.
I mean, I need like to that. Start Russian. I mean, I started it a little bit, and now that you're doing this, it's sort of inspiring me to figure out what to do. I guess I go Rosetta Stone.
Yeah. I mean, luckily I don't. Well, you're in L.A. I mean, there's so many there's a huge Russian community or Russian speaking community out there. So you can definitely find like a grandma to come sit with you for an hour every day.
But do you think that that is better or worse than sort of like workbooks, if you will, that are,
I think having a native
more
speaker,
than just 1 hour?
I feel like native speaker is going to, I know you like extra credit because you're you.
Yeah, I do.
But to actually have somebody speak to you with the accent, with the knowledge of the language and everything. I was actually really rude when I went in for the meeting because there's an American woman and a Russian or a Belarusian woman that are in charge of the Russian program. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I know you speak Russian to the American professor, but I really would like to focus the verbal with Natalia, who's going to be my Belarusian instructor.
Right.
I want her to speak to me. I want you to teach me the rules and the grammar because that's what's great. But I don't want to talk like you.
Right,
so I was really rude. I tried not to be, but you have to, you know, tell it like it is, I suppose. But I'm excited, but also nervous because I'm afraid that I will just be like, okay, screw this. I'm not coming back. I'm not going to learn.
So, you got to stick to it.
I will. But it actually leads me to a funny story that I had with anyway, everyone keep your fingers crossed for me that I can learn properly. And it's something I'm passionate about, so I think that'll make it easier too.
You're already so good. I mean, you're fluent in Russian.
Yeah, but you can always be better.
Exactly.
Yeah. But so that's happening. But this meeting happened maybe 3 weeks ago with the Russian department. And I was very excited with how it went, but it actually lends itself to this fun story. So I was flying home from Sun Valley, not this past weekend, but the one before. And I'd done a performance and I'm real tired. And you know how I am in an airport. I wear the scarf up around my nose and a low hat so nobody sees me. And it's not that I'm so Kardashian famous that everyone's going to be like, oh, look, there's Johnny Weir and he looks terrible. I just don't want anyone to see me, whether I'm Johnny Weir or not, at the airport. And
you just want to be invisible.
I just want to be completely invisible. So why don't I make myself look as ridiculous as possible so that I'm absolutely the most visible person in this airport? But anyway, I was that show, it ends really late at night because it's an outdoor ice rink and you have to play by when the moon comes out and the stars and you skate under the stars and blah, blah, blah. So then you end the show very late at night. And usually I'm on the very first flight out of this small town the next morning. Uh-huh. So that's like a 4 a.m. wake up. So I slept for 3 hours and went to the airport again. And it was, you know, tragic. I was red faced. My eyes were all swollen. I didn't want to see anyone. And I made it to Denver, where my connecting flight back to Philadelphia was. And I was standing in line, and lucky for me, not bragging, but I have priority on every airline because I fly a lot.
I'm exclusively Delta.
I know you is. But yeah, I've got all of them. And I've got the
Before
Delta.
Before you start that, I have something to interject about airlines.
Well, this trip around the world, I mean, geez.
I mean.
Anyway, continue.
I don't know about you. I guess since you're sort of, you have status on all of them. I've become a Delta girl. Like, they should hire me. When I know that I'm not, it starts from the very beginning. So, like, I flew American and another, I forget what other, back and forth. I flew two different ones, but.
And United, I think, because United went out of Newark and you got to get back to LA.
Right.
And
so.
This is real life, guys. We know flight patterns because we have to do it so much.
Right. So I get. It starts right from the beginning when I know I'm not flying Delta. I mean, granted, I've been with Delta forever. I have a gazillion miles. I was part of their, like, 360 program. So if, like, I'm late, you know, this is how much I've flown on their airline. Like, if I'm late in between flights, they'll get a car on the tarmac, and I, like, drive in the car to the next, you know, plane.
Yes, ma'am.
And you board right from the tarmac, and it's like, they are, I mean, their app is amazing. It's so easy, whatever. Okay, I love their planes. They always have nice new planes and amazing movies, and you know the outlets are right there to charge your phone and
just
Wi-Fi
some light
is,
chop. Light chop,
right? Wi-Fi is always clear and clean, and blah blah blah. Yeah.
So anyway, I was in the line to get on the airplane from Denver to Philadelphia, and I was wearing a hat that I got as a souvenir when I was performing at the Jimmy Fund Ice Show in Harvard. And, you know, I didn't go to Harvard. I didn't go to college. I went for 1 week to the University of Delaware, and I decided that I couldn't train and go to college at the same time. And I didn't like it. So I didn't go to college. Anyway, I'm standing in line, and Philadelphia has a lot of crotchety, waspy types. And they are professors because, you know, there's an Ivy League school in Philadelphia. There are lots of colleges. And you get a lot of, when flying, you get a lot of those crotchety guys that look very well educated, that wear sweatpants still with a blazer. You know the ones. They're older. And this guy had, like, his luggage tag on that said, like, I'm a bajillion miler on American Airlines. Anyway, he looked at me, and I had my hat on, and I had my scarf pulled up around my face, as I said. And he looks at me, and he says, does that H on your hat mean what I think it means? And he was trying to, like, have a conversation, I think, with somebody. He had no idea who I was. And he was trying to have that conversation with, you know, an alum. Oh, I'm also an Ivy Leaguer. Oh, right. I went to Yale or right. wherever the F he went. Anyway, I said, no, it's just a souvenir. And he then got like a ruddiness to his cheek. And he looked at me and got really serious. And he got too serious for me to feel comfortable just because I didn't even know what his name was. I didn't meet him. We just had an interlude where I was standing behind him in the line to get on the plane. Uh-huh. And he looks at me and he says, young man, education is for everyone. And I said, well, I'm so sorry to disappoint you, sir, but I was very busy and didn't have time to go to college. And he was like, not that you should have gone to Harvard, of course, but education is for everyone. You should have made time to go to college. And I said, I'm so sorry. I was preparing for and competing in 2 Olympic Games when I should have been at college.
What did he say?
He said, he had nothing to say. Like, it was that silence is exactly what I got. And then his wife was sitting there and she was like, oh, isn't that great? What sport did you compete in? And I said, ma'am, I competed in bobsled.
No, you didn't.
I did. I absolutely did. I was so angry. I was so pissed because this man had, like, in 2 seconds, completely dressed me down for not having, first of all, an education, second of all, an Ivy League education. So I had to throw it out there. And then he tried to, like, bring it back. He was like, well, are you still competing? Were you performing? Where are you coming from? And I was like, sir, I was in Sun Valley. And he was like, oh, we keep a home in Sun Valley. What were you doing there? And I said, oh, I was just on vacation, even though I was skating and working.
Right.
And he was trying to get in there. Will we see you in the next Olympics? Where are they now? Rio? Like,
right.
No, they're actually in South Korea. And I said, now I'm a TV broadcaster. And I did that without an education. And then I said, I'm so sorry, but I have to write this email. Excuse me.
Excuse me.
So it was just, I'm so busy. I'm so sorry.
Sorry, I have to do this Insta story. Excuse me.
I'm working right now, sir. I'm Insta story.
Storm.
So it was a really fun, first of all, young man. Usually I get young miss when people want to talk down to me. But yeah, that was a fun one. So everyone has their own plan in life.
Yeah,
and don't listen to old
people.
Everyone has
their own path.
Everyone has their own path. Speaking of, should we get into a little bit of skating corner?
Yeah, should we talk about fan call?
We'll do that after skating corner.
We don't want to leave it to the end like last time.
Okay, let's do... Okay, guys.
Disappointing.
Here's the thing. Last week, we were rushing to get out of our studios because Tara's out in the LA studios and they were kicking us out to get somebody else in. And we rushed through what our new plan is. So every week, we hope to have a short interview with one of our listeners. And there are trillions of you. So, I mean, just we will comb through all of our entries every week and choose only one that we will bring on the air with us. And honey, do you know how?
How?
Okay, so we're going to have you all write us either on Instagram direct at Tara and Johnny or via email at our special joint email, Tara, T-A-R-A, and A-N-D, Johnny, J-O-H-N-N-Y, fancall, F-A-N-K-A-L-L at gmail.com. And basically every week on the podcast, we're going to ask you a question and the best submission, the best story that we get out of you guys is going to be who we interview. So make sure you include your phone number and your return email address in your response.
Yeah,
because
it was like the phone call itself that didn't work. It just, guys, we didn't get great stories.
Guys, we didn't really, you guys didn't really bring it.
Okay,
us.
Do you want to tell them what we're looking for this week?
Okay, so this week, which is the same as last week if you were listening and paying attention, we want to hear your most embarrassing drunken mishap. So when you're holding court at your favorite bar, what happened to you? Did you trip over your heel after you stepped in some gum and over a dog and your skirt went up over your head and like your Catholic school teacher priest saw your panties? Like what happened to you?
We need like really humorous, funny, witty stories because that's going to be fun for our listeners when we chat on next week's podcast.
Right. And we want to talk to you not just about when your dress went over your head and we saw your panties, but we want to talk about who you are, what you like about the podcast and all that stuff. It's just our way of having a guest on the show that is not enforced. So we don't want somebody that's promoting something or like a blogger or something coming on. We want you guys. You guys are our friends. And we want to promote you on our
podcast.
Right.
We like you.
We like you. So that'll be a new addition to Fan Corner.
We don't like many people.
We're pretty exclusionary.
Okay, but so yeah. Skating Corner?
Skating Corner. So, guys, we usually try to stay away from talking too much sports. I know we're such jocks. But there was some stuff that came out this week about our sport, the lovely world of figure skating, that we take umbrage with and that we want to discuss. Just for those casual skating fans who watch us during the Olympics, you guys will get a refresher course in what's going on with the scoring. The skating hardcore people that listen to us, we hope you like our opinions.
Right.
So, honey, do you want me to preface it or do you want to?
You can go ahead.
Okay. So basically, there's Mr. Bianchetti is an Italian man that works in the Council of International Figure Skating. And he and I suppose other people in that council have proposed new restrictions on the judging of the sport. So essentially what they're saying is that any very difficult jump, so a triple axel.
Well, wait, before you go there, I think their overall plan is they're afraid with, you know, so.
Good call. Yeah, tell what the goal is.
Back in the day, when it was the 6.0 system, which many people loved, and it was, you know, a huge change when it happened, and we now have this new judging system with a bunch of numbers that nobody understands, but every single move is accounted for.
Every spin, every jump, every step sequence, they all have a value and a base value. And then for that base value, each individual judge can give you a +3 or a -3 on it.
Right.
So that adds to the value or detracts from the base value, depending on how well you perform it. So
right. And if you do a triple axel and fall, literally not just the jumps or the spins. It's, you know, the quality of your skating. You have your presentation score, but then also your technical score, whether it's the footwork sequence or, you know, each spin, each position. It's very difficult now for these skaters in 4 minutes to sort of mark and check off all these boxes and do them really well to get these points. Whereas, you know, in the 6.0 system, it was super subjective. I'm not saying that it's that much less subjective.
It's not that much less subjective now.
Now, there's just many more restrictions and rules and thing and sort of, you know, the judges have to abide by this new system. Whereas before, it was just sort of like, well, I mean, I really like her. 6.0, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, 5.3,
wow,
I don't like her. So... It was so different. But again, I mean, that's a whole nother thing of, you know, they were doing this because of the judging scandal in 2002. And how can they make their skate or their sport
more fair,
fair and judged in a proper way? And that's a whole nother discussion because, Johnny, I'm sure we kind of feel the same way. There's so many loopholes and ways around this judging system that's now in place, as well as the old one. So you can be just as subjective in many ways and forms, and that's frustrating as well. But anyway, that's
right.
another
conversation.
Another day. But anyway, so now their new thing is we want, you know.
Well, they want several things, not before this next Olympics, but after the Olympics are over, that first season that starts after the Olympics. So the new generation will have come up into the top level. They want to start these new regulations to make our sport more fair. Again, that's sort of the sneeze screen that they're hiding behind. So,
and when
what
they say
suggesting...
fair, they want. I think the problem is now, all of a sudden, within the last 2 years, you know, because of, you know, all the points that are assigned to each jump, for to break it down for someone who's not a skating fan, you know, before it was sort of like, oh, you did a beautiful triple Lutz. That's one of the elements. Like, we'll give you a 5-5 on that, you know, in their heads. And then the overall score they sort of put towards their technical score. Whereas now, you know, if you do a quad Lutz, you get a specific base value plus the advantage of possibly a positive 3 in the grade of execution, how well you performed that actual jump. So within the last couple of years, because of that, everyone's looking for a new strategy to get more points. And a lot of the young men, especially, take, for example, a guy you might hear about a lot this coming Olympics, Nathan Chen. You know, they want to push themselves further and do more difficult quads and more of them so they can grab all these insane points. So, you know, 4 years ago when two quads, you know, in a program,
won the Olympics.
Right, seemed, oh my goodness, this is like the best you could possibly get out of a men's technical score. Now it's 5 quads in a program. So it's advanced so much. And I think that the ISU is worried and concerned that because of that, you're losing the artistic aspect of the sport. So you're losing the artistry when you're trying so hard to get these technical points by pushing the envelope and adding more quads and doing more quads. And now they're worried that the balance is missing. So all the kids with all those quads don't have to be as artistic as someone else. And they're going to beat them for sure because they've thought of this strategy. Why not add another quad?
Right. I mean, this is
very technical. This is why we don't always talk about skating on the podcast, because I know a lot of you don't like it when we get too technical.
Too skatey.
Right.
But this is like any other sport or any other art form or singing or whatever it may be. These things evolve, right? So in my era, for example, Yevgeny Plushenko was pretty much winning everything, and he would do one or two quads. And he was amazing. And the fact that he was able to do that at that time and still be artistic, because there were a lot less regulations on what you could do artistically, or the spins weren't as important back then, he was able to have a very consistent reign over the rest of the world. And it was well deserved. He was dramatic, artistic. He spun reasonably well, great jumps and technique, and he was a great champion for it. Basically, now the skaters that do push the sport forward, the ones that do evolve technically, are going to be what we've been trying to get to is that the International Skating Union wants to devalue every quad jump and triple axel that the men or ladies will perform, and also the pair skating that do throw quads. They want to devalue all of those things to take the importance off of them so that the skaters who are more artistic have more of a shot at winning. Which, and that's not what sport is.
No, if you want the sport to have, is in the Olympic Games. It's, of course it's going to evolve. It's crazy that they would take away points and take away the base value of how difficult it is to execute a quad. I've never done a quad. I mean, especially in competition, I used to practice it. And let me tell you, I would land one a week, and it was the most difficult thing I've ever done on the ice. So how they could feel good,
yeah.
Now I'm getting to a personal level, how they could feel good about that decision when, you know, someone goes out there and lands a perfectly clean, beautiful quad to take the base value of pretty much saying it's not that hard. We're going to decrease
it. Yeah, it's not that hard.
But the people that are in charge,
it's that hard. I mean, the people that are in charge are at that age when in their era of skating, if they ever even skated before in their lives or figure skated before in their lives, they were struggling to put triple jumps into their program. So this is 80s, even the beginning of the 90s. So these people have no idea how hard it is to do a quad. I mean, I never performed one well in competition, but I did them, and I was part of my daily routine, and they hurt, and they're hard, and you want to have the judging and the score reflect how hard of an element you're doing. And it's not Nathan Chen's fault, for example, that he isn't as artistic as Yuzuru Hanyu, but he's finding a way to be competitive.
He's finding a way to be competitive, but look at it. He's not really beating Yuzuru. So I don't understand why they're so upset. There's still the artistic presentation score. So there is a way. Like, say, so I understand what they're saying. And it's always been this debate of the balance of artistry between, you know, the technique and the technical side of the sport. But
and also, not to cut you off, but we have to remember that figure skating has lost a lot of viewership and fandom since the judging scandal that was brought at the 2002 Olympics when two pairs, one from Canada, one from Russia, were both awarded a gold medal because there was cheating in the judging panel. They've done this to themselves, and now they're scrambling, trying to find the way.
But this is, I think, the way. I mean, do you think in, you know, whether it's like a snowboarder or a skier, like when someone's trying a new trick or a new element, do you think they're taking down the value of that and saying, oh, no, we want to,
Or gymnastics, for that matter.
It's insane to me. And the problem that I have with it is already right now, they have a system in place that keeps that balance if they want it so badly. If they want the judges to say, okay, hey, Nathan Shen just did five incredible quads, but overall his artistic score shouldn't be higher than someone like Yuzuru Hanyu or Jason Brown. Understood. So there's still that score to be scored. And that's why Nathan Shen isn't winning every event. If
right,
it was all about quads, he'd be winning every single event, but he's not. It's about timing and the point of figure skating that people forget. Yes, you love artistry. But again, you've chose to watch figure skating, which is in the Olympic Games, which is, you know, people put their bodies at risk every day to perform difficult elements. If you just want beautiful skating, then that should be maybe something separate. And
should
that
there
should
be a recreational sort of skating
or,
event?
No, I mean, they have so many. They have, you know, they have synchronized skating. They have, you know, they used to have figures, which was a completely separate event. If they just want an event for, you know, artistry and beauty on the ice, which I would watch, that would be like going to a ballet and still doing difficult moves. But if you start attacking the jumps and spins and sort of the identity of what skating is, you're taking away the sport side of it. So it's like, I understand people who are all about artistry. I'm artistic in every sense of the way in my life. I love the arts. I love Broadway. I love dance. I love watching beautiful figure skating. But at the same time, you chose to watch figure skating. So
it's a sport.
You have to understand it's a sport.
The whole premise of this is that, you know, the figure skating community and figure skaters in general will always be questioned as to whether what we do is a sport or not. And I always say that I would throw any football player, basketball player, baseball player in my shoes for 1 hour and watch them not cry.
Right.
My sport is so hard that you want it to be appreciated. And what this...
So why would they take that away from a sport that's already struggling with that perception? I'm getting a little heated because it's mind-blowing. And I can understand if there's a need for more artistry in the sport now that because of the system that's in place, it is taking away from that. I'll give you a short bit on why this conversation is up. Is you have for the men, a 4.5 minute program, you are now trying to beat the system and get all these points. You're adding all these quads. You need time to set them up. You also have to fit in your spins and your footwork sequence and all of these other elements, and it's leaving very little time and little room for artistry. And it's difficult to balance both of them. That I understand. I totally understand that, but there's nothing we can do about that. The sport is always going to evolve. Like you said, Johnny, in your day, you know, a quad or two was the highest point you could get to. In my day, it was very rare for someone to be doing triples. So if I didn't push myself and do a triple, I wouldn't have ever gotten to the points that I did. So it's sort of mind-blowing, and it's also just baffling to me because I don't understand what they're so worried about. And I can tell you in my mind, just knowing the politics of it, I think they're worried about, these younger skaters that do all these quads that aren't as artistic and a bit more mechanical, you know, taking over the sport. But that hasn't happened. Look at your top winners. You have Yevgenia Medvedeva, who is killing it technically, but she's a gorgeous, innovative, creative skater with beautiful artistry and personality. And you have Yuzuru Hanyu, who is a reigning Olympic champion, whose edges and beauty on the ice is shown in every competition, and he's winning. Like, what
the
are
right
they
people are winning. I don't know what
about.
They're so scared of. Yeah, I think this is a conversation that's looking not at who's winning the events. It's the people that are right now, the young ones, that are down in 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th place.
But that's what I don't understand. That's what I'm saying. I could understand if they were winning. Like, that's
exactly
what they would be fearful of. But they're not. So I don't understand what their fear is. But
I mean, so many people are drawn to the artistic side of the sport. And the people that are winning our sport are artistic and are doing
right.
the technical tricks as well. You have to be well-rounded. It's no different than it was in Tara's era or Dick Button's era or whoever's era. It's the same. The best athlete and artist will win figure skating. And this whole sort of stab for these proposed changes to the judging system are so discriminatory towards the innovative skaters that are learning. I mean, never in a million years I think we would see 18 quads performed in the last 6 men's entries at the World Championships. Never did I think I'd see that.
Yeah, and first off, it makes it exciting to see if a skater can go out there and be doing these difficult elements, trying to combine the artistry the best they can, and handling it under pressure. That's what makes a sport exciting. That's why people want to watch it. They want to sit on the edge of their seats. If all of a sudden you're taking down the base value of these quads, less people are going to be wanting to do them, which is going to take our sport back a step. And then you're going to sit there and be like, oh, good, I'm glad they changed that. So this means it's easier than what we
it's
saw last
year.
Yeah. And I'm just going to look for the best artist. And, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And
it's mind-boggling.
It really is.
And to, you know, just so the casual skating fans out there, there are other skating legends and stuff that have spoken out about this, and there are people that are very upset in the skating world. And like much of skating, this is a proposal that some of it has already been approved. There's more to it than what we talked about, but if
oh,
we get
so
really
much
into
more.
It.
I mean, but the thing, all I would, my last remark on this is, if you look back over time, if you look at someone, maybe take Plyshenko, who if you put Plyshenko next to the current champion, Olympic champion right now, Yuzuru Hanyu, the artistry, in my opinion, is not on the same level. Yuzuru has taken it to a different level, okay? And so back in the day when Plyshenko was sort of the first to be hitting all these quads and winning all these events, if he didn't push the sport like he did, Yuzuru would never have been able to do all the quads that he's doing now, which are he's doing harder quads than Plyshenko ever did. He's doing more quads than Plyshenko did. And then combining it with artistry, we wouldn't have this perfect specimen of an athlete like Yuzuru.
There
would be no evolution. And the point of sport, the point of someone winning an Olympic Games is that they're giving up their life and sacrificing to bluntly be better than the average athlete. Be
yes.
better than, you know, someone who can just go out and do something that 9 other people can do. The whole point of it in skating is to push the envelope, to be technically brilliant, be doing things that no one else can do that seems so incredibly hard, and also combining it with artistry. And not everyone can do it. It's about timing. Nathan Chen right now can't do what Yuzuru Hanyu does. But maybe in 4 years he can, and maybe he'll turn into this brilliant artist who's also doing 5 quads. Isn't that what we want for our sport? End of story.
Yes. Well said, honey. So you guys, obviously, the skating season is coming up soon, starting in October. Tara and I, you can
my
follow us and follow
fast.
It. Yeah, I know.
This
I
have, is why we don't
I'm
talk
sweating
skating.
On my elbow pits. but yeah, guys, it's our world and it's really important to us. And we hope you understood at least most of what we were saying. But basically, the people in charge of skating are trying to make evolution not a real thing. So they're kind of Bible thumping, if you will, that we have to go back to our roots and our traditions where there's no chance for growth for that. So Tara and I are very against whatever's been proposed. But anyway, let's get out of that. We have very limited time. So, I mean, something that we really need to do is send our hearts and prayers out to everyone affected by Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Harvey in Texas, in Florida, in the Caribbean. We're praying for all of you.
Yes, it's been horrible to watch. I mean, obviously, I live on the East Coast in South Carolina, and last year we went through Matthew and the fear that people that live on the coast like that have when these storms are brewing and coming up the – when we were watching and it was building and it was coming towards Puerto Rico, the fear that, you know, at that time I had about Charleston because you didn't know which way it was going to turn left, if it was going to go east or west, and just the fear that you live in as you see these storms brew is terrifying, and what has happened to Florida. My heart, my prayers, they go out to all of you, and I just hope that everyone got to safe shelter. And, you know, I can't imagine what it's like going back. You know, the first sort of wave of panic is to find safety and shelter and make sure your family's okay and that you're okay. And but then, you know, I think sometimes people forget and don't realize that when the storm passes and people go back to regular life, these people are going home to nothing and starting from scratch and rebuilding, and how terrifying and hard that must be. And even right now, I mean, it's still going on. I mean, Charleston yesterday is my parents are out there. I mean, it's underwater. It's roads or rivers. And this was such a terrible, terrible storm. And then to have Jose behind it and the earthquake, I don't know what's happening right now.
Yes. I mean, also we're sending our hearts and prayers to all of those affected by the earthquake in Mexico. And of course, just yesterday we all sat in memorial for September 11th and all of the legacies that have come out of that tragedy. So there's just so much hard stuff going on, and we just want you all to know that we're with you, and we hope we bring you a little bit of smiles and some
relief.
Laughter, some giggles, and we can help in any way we can. But with that said, we need to also
donate.
We need to go. So,
oh, wait, Johnny.
No,
we
I'm kidding.
Say
I'm
to
kidding.
Donate.
No, that's what
the
I was
Red
going
Cross.
To say. I couldn't remember the word. So.
Go and donate.
Go and donate. So head over to whatever charity that you find the best.
Yeah.
I donated to the Red Cross for Irma and Harvey, and I urge
same.
Everyone to do the same.
Okay.
So
on that
with
note,
that said, I mean, we've taken up an hour of your lives, so we're really happy to have done that, and we hope that you're all safe out there. We want to thank all 16 trillion of you that are listening to Tara and Johnny, the podcast, and we can't wait to be with you again next week. And just so you know, from now on, just in editing time, we are going to start having our podcast appear on Thursdays instead of Wednesdays, just to give us a little bit more time to make sure that everything is clean and perfect for you guys, and also to bleep out the cussing in case you listen with your children in the car. Hashtag Kelly Hurley.
Also, please don't forget what we talked about with fan call. I mean, it shouldn't be called fan call since you're not calling in anymore, but I guess you'll be calling in next week. So make sure you send your stories over very quickly, because we need to turn that around and then get a hold of you and figure out how we can get you on the show so we can speak to you in person
and hear your
rather
stories.
Over a microphone.
But again, that's Tara and Johnny fan call with a K at gmail.com. And this week's topic is to tell us the story of your most embarrassing drunken mishap. And we'll also share ours with you next week.
Hashtag drunken moments.
Hashtag drunken mishaps. Hashtag sinners. Well, honey, I hope you feel better. Get over this cold by next week, because
hey, sorry,
we have a lot more talking
so
to
crappy,
do.
Sorry, sounded so crappy, guys.
No, you've been worse. I promise.
Thanks.
But I love you very
you're
much, and
bad,
we love all of you
bad.
Out there.
Okay, I love you.
I love you. But until next time, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
There she is, Miss America.
This program is brought to you in living color on NBC. The opening and some non-presentation portions were pre-recorded.